in politics here in Santa Cruz.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Interesting, yes. Timely, yes. Important, yes. And those are my points.
Well, thank you, Bob.
And I'll throw in one other thing here about rent control.
Mm-hmm. We should say that you were the author of the Rent Stabilization Initiative.
Well, it was the first time that rent control was attempted in about two decades in Santa Cruz, the first time in maybe 15 years in California.
Well, maybe Chris Krohn can now introduce his own rent control measure because yours has not made it on the ballot, right?
They certainly have the clout to do that if they have the courage and the leadership to do it,
mm-hmm.
right? So there are doubtful elements in what I just said. But rent control, just to put it in a nutshell, stabilizes residential rent increases while the tenant resides in the regulated unit. It's really quite simple. It has a very strong track record of success over two decades in California. The entire province of Ontario adopted rent control in 1992. It's very far from a failed policy. What it says is that when you're a tenant and you have no equity or appreciation benefits from paying for housing, the least that you have that government can provide, like it does with other forms of regulation, is it can provide a lid on how much your rent can be increased while you're a tenant. To me, it's very reasonable, and it's extremely appropriate for our community here in Santa Cruz. And even using Dolphin Lee as an example, there was a rent increase, very modest, but that rent increase, as modest as it was, probably would have not occurred as high as it went were there rent control in Santa Cruz. To use Berkeley as an example, in 1999, Berkeley's Rent Stabilization Board said that you can't raise rents more than 1% or $8, whichever is less, meaning that if your rent was $800 or more a month, it couldn't go up more than $8. So rent control would have a dramatic impact on rental housing.
Well, I know that we're considering the case of a woman named Mary Kutry, who is about to be thrown out of her house. She received her eviction notice at 6:01 on Thursday morning. The sheriffs will be at her door, according to the five-day notice she got last week. And she is a 74-year-old woman who lives on Cedar Street, who is about to be thrown out of her house. And the reason for that is, according to her, is that the landlord plans to move in two tenants in the place of one, and in essence, double his rent. And it's the kind of profiteering that results in human suffering, and I think just causes such widespread dislocation that it cries out for a public solution.
It cries out for government intervention. And rent control, rent stabilization ordinances, generally speaking, come with eviction protection. And I would assume that a rent stabilization ordinance in Santa Cruz would come with eviction protection. The attempts that were written up in the late 70s, early 80s came with eviction protection. So that would not happen. If they wanted to boot a tenant out, it would have to go to the Rent Stabilization Board unless there was some kind of a problem, like they're not paying their rent or what have you. Someone pays their rent on time, they're a good tenant, you can't just boot them out because the market can bear a 100% rent increase. I think it's time that the community of Santa Cruz came to the realization of the reality of what it's like to be a tenant in this town in this time. And I'm not saying anything negative about property owners, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There is a role for making a profit on property, but there's also a responsibility for the community to recognize what it's like to be a tenant and have no equity benefits in your housing costs and to have your rent jacked up 50% or what have you, just because the market will bear it.
Dig it.
All right.
Thank you,
Robert.
Bob.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Renters unite. You have nothing to lose but your hobbles, or I should say your rent increases. Yeah, I think it's time we got together, and I'm going to be there at 6:01 in the morning on Chestnut Street, no, on Cedar Street. Of course, I better get my producer to give me the address. Usually I have it with me, but I don't think I have it with me at this point. As I said, Mary, a 74-year-old woman with medical problems, is being thrown out on the street, and she's willing to pay her rent, but the reality is she's not going to be allowed to do that. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
And that's 321A Walnut Street.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. 321A Walnut Street, 6:01 a.m. Mark that on your calendar. Get up early and come on down. We'll have some picket signs, or you can make your own, as the sheriffs and the landlord dump yet another Santa Cruz person out on the street, a woman who's willing to pay rent.
Hello?
Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Yes.
Hi, this is David Silva.
Hi, David.
Glad to hear you talking about rent control again. Whenever I call the city council and tell them to come up with some kind of comprehensive plan on housing and homelessness, I always include rent stabilization or rent control.
And they always say nothing, right?
And they always say nothing. But and maybe there's not enough people calling. We do have quite a few people calling right now regarding decriminalization of sleep, which is the other end of the spectrum. Once you're out there, then you become criminalized.
And
but
in 2 days,
trying to prevent you from being out there is eviction protection. Supposedly, we're supposed to have eviction protection in this city, but that's very questionable.
For 700 to 1,500 people, of course, that are already out there, what you're doing around the sleeping ban initiative is very important. Go ahead.
It's a basic human right to be able to sleep at night. It should be in a civilized society a basic human right to have a roof over your head. But until we get there, the criminalization of people for becoming houseless is just not tenable. We have some 70 people who participated in the Rolling Fast in January and February. 10% of those people converted over to the Progressive Fast, which is a way of slowly going on to full fast. And meeting with 10 of them this Tuesday morning, we're having breakfast at my house to have our last breakfast. And those people that are going on to Progressive Fast to make sure that they're doing their fasting correctly, and we're just going to be sort of a little dietary lesson and a communion.
Have you invited the Sentinel?
I had thought about that, but I have to ask every other person that's going to be here first. I had thought about that. I did invite Crone, Sugar, and
Catherine Byers.
Crone, Sugar, and Byers, and it was an RSVP, and I've gotten no RSVP.
What about the Dolphin Lee Duke, Tim Fitzmaurice?
He's on his own there. I did give a call to Tim this morning and told him that I had no RSVP from either one of the three council members. Perhaps Tuesday morning, them preparing for their special city council. Maybe it's not practical.
Do you know anything about that special city council meeting? I keep seeing it on the internet, but I don't know what's on the agenda. What is that?
It's on the internet. I got an agenda somewhere here. I think you can pull it up. I think you can pull it up now. It's on the website now.
Do you have any brief description of what might be happening there, David?
No, I really don't. I really just grabbed it and ran.
Perhaps you could take a peek at it at some point and let us know.
Call you back, yeah. So I want to tell people we have 10, like I said, 10 people that are going to be going from either Progressive Fast or from Progressive Fast to Full Fast. We're aiming for 18. I'll be speaking at the University Catholics after Mass tonight. Maybe, and so there were quite a few of those people that participate in the Rolling Fast that fasted from sleep, so and they seem to be quite committed. So I'm hoping to get them to join over. But we want to keep the pressure going. So what we're doing in March also is we're having another Rolling Fast, but that'll be fasting from just sleep, giving one night of sleep up. So you can call me in my home 429-5284 if you want to join the March Rolling Fast. All that's required is that you call City Hall when you join, and then you call City Hall the day after to report your findings.
And again, this will be
like
an agreement to refrain from sleeping for one night?
Refrain from sleeping between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m., the same as a homeless person.
Mm-hmm.
Then you call in your results. If you fail to stay awake, that's important that you call and tell them that. So the whole thing is based on truth and reality, and put as much reality in front of their face and as much pressure, ever mounting pressure. We need more and more people to continue joining the fast in whatever way they can. I know you're fasting from sugar, right, Robert?
More or less.
More or less. How about more from now on, okay?
Hey, you and my doctor both.
Okay.
Interesting enough, the Homeless Issues Task Force...
Somebody might want to fast from masturbation, you know.
No, we could never do that.
I don't know.
Let's not get crazy.
One night...
Masturbate and smash the state, David.
Right.
It's interesting, the Homeless Issues Task Force is meeting tomorrow, and of course we've been trying to get... They, of course, came out for an even broader position than eliminating the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance. They said suspend the entire sleeping and camping ordinances until there are safe zones,
yeah.
And they will be discussing... they won't be discussing it. They've already discussed it. They've given it to the city council. They've been told, take a hike. I guess they're working on their little report instead of standing up and resigning, as I think they should be, or engaging in high-profile support for your fast, support for the protest, support for other things. But their meeting is tomorrow at 5:30 at the ABC room of the...
Is it the ABC room tomorrow?
I believe so.
I thought my agenda said Loudon Nelson.
Well,
double check that, Robert.
The thing to do is call city clerk at
420-503-0
tomorrow morning and find out
where that meeting is.
And also, I want to invite you, David, and other people on the air. This is my next subject coming up. to the Citizens Police Review Board closed meeting. I don't know if you know that the City Council designated three council members and the CPRB designated three of their members to sit down for the next 6 months, work out a so-called strengthening of the Citizens Police Review Board.
Yeah.
Now, I'm rather skeptical about whether that can be practically done, given, and it seems like another one of these commissions that goes off into nowhere, maybe, but maybe not. But the reality that bothers me is that they are planning to do this behind closed doors.
Well, if there was an individual personnel matter involved, I could understand that. But since there is no individual personnel matter involved, I don't see how they can do that. In fact, I think it's illegal for them.
I called
to do that.
John Barisoni on Friday, and he said that because they are an advisory body, and because they have only three members of a seven-member city council on it, and because they're an ad hoc committee that meets for less than 6 months, they are entitled to do that. They're not covered by the Brown Act.
Then it's probably just going against every single issue that every single one of them got elected on.
What I think we should do, and I think that's very relevant, is we should show up there at 3:45 tomorrow at the city manager's office, as many people as want to come down, and say, open up these meetings, let's make sure the police department gets a real examination, not this kind of hokey-dokey, behind-closed-doors, whatever's going on there.
Well, I don't know whatever's going on there. I know that Arnie Left is serious about reconstituting the Citizens Police Review
Board. He supports
a
closed process. I don't think that's a very serious approach.
Well, Robert, when you know, if I was hearing it from anybody else but you, I would wonder, you know, what they mean by closed process. But, you know, for some reason in this town, closed processes happen when you come up more often. you seem to be the fall guy for the closed process issue in this whole town.
The meetings are closed, David. They're closed to every single individual,
and
not
you know
on
that,
the board.
And you know that as long as I'm fasting, I'm really not going to be going out.
I encourage to come tomorrow at 3:45
to
City Hall, the city manager's office, to request that the public be admitted to these meetings. I mean, I don't think many of us are terribly interested in these meetings, but the public should have access to them.
Well, I think the public is very interested in what we're doing with our police department. You know, there's enough stories. I remember in the workplace when the Rodney King riots took place, one of the things that happened at the workplace that I worked at is that everybody sat around, and it seems that every grandmother and every aunt and every cousin had a relative who had been abused by the police, and it was an injustice. So I think the whole country knows that there's something wrong with the police department.
It's kind of depressing. It's depressing to see the response you got, where people were rioting like 8 years ago. They were in anger at the Simi Valley verdict. And there was a man who was just beaten up who survived, Rodney King. Here we have a guy who was shot, 19 times?
Well, it was 41 shots with 19 hits.
Right. They got to go...
42 shots and 19 hits.
Well, apparently, they got to go back to their training to get a little better. So maybe they should use the Santa Cruz Police Department firing range. But the fact is...
because those other 23 shots could have hit innocent standbyers. That's just two separate civil suits going to be coming out of that.
It took another Simi Valley-type jury, apparently not too long, to acquit all these people. The jury didn't even look.
For those who are confused, the black jurors in Albany, New York, are not the same as black juries in the Bronx. Albany, New York is a rich black community.
Right. What I'm saying is that the thing that depressed me was the response of the public was much more muted than it was 8 or 9 years ago.
Well, the family did do a call for, you know, peace and you know, quiet and try to work on this.
Yeah, I'm not aware that the Rodney King family didn't do something similar back in 1992. It seems to me the temper of the country has become markedly more sedated. This really kind of upsets me.
I don't think it's so sedated as it is oppressed.
Right, there you go.
I really do think that, you know, the people are really, really confounded on what to do about the police, who do have supreme authority above and beyond the Constitution, and that is not the way this country was founded.
I mean, here are
and
four
until we fix that problem, we're going to be up against it.
Four plainclothes cops get out of a car, and when a guy pulls out his wallet, they start firing shots at him. You know, I mean, and don't stop.
In his doorway.
In his own doorway. I mean, four white cops, a black Jamaican immigrant. Anyway, it's enough to make you sick.
Yes, it is, and it goes on daily. We only hear these super stories, but believe me, there's plenty of other stories you don't hear. I mean,
well, we have our own Happy John Dine case.
It's every day somewhere, Robert. Mm-hmm. This happens to gay people. This happens to black people. This happens to poor people, homeless people. Every day somewhere. And all you have to do is go into a place where just common, ordinary, working folk are sitting around talking, and you'll hear the horror stories of their relatives that have been abused by police officers.
Eight fatal shootings by police in San Jose in the last 13 months.
Yeah, exactly.
It's incredible. So, David, I hope that people do give you a call at 429-5284 to either help sign up with the initiative petition drive or to join the Progressive Rolling
Fast.
If
they want to pick up a petition, they can pick it up every Wednesday at noon in front of City Hall. After this Tuesday, I'm going to be delegating somebody else to have those petitions there. I'm hoping to get some space and time at the Info Center. Anybody listening that can get me into the Info Center and out of the rain, I really would appreciate it so we could hand out petitions. Also, the university, Robin Lieberman, has petitions up there. You can get in touch with her.
And plus, of course, there's a protest that we're hoping will begin on March 8th, which will be sort of an outdoors, downtown, in-your-face protest that we're hoping to do a 24-hour basis.
We're going to have a rolling set of demonstrations from everything from Don't Sleep Tonight Night to various kinds of things that will dramatize the plight of people being criminalized for sleeping.
But if folks want these things to happen, they have to give you a call at 429-5284.
Well,
that's
my home phone number. I want that number only if people are going to join the fast.
Right.
If they wanted petitions and something else, call the Green Party number 425-4499.
And actually, if you're getting confused with all these numbers, just remember 423-HUFF, and we'll give you the appropriate numbers.
You guys still got that list, by the way. Remember the list from the university? That's almost 3 weeks, 4 weeks now. I need that list, Robert.
We've got to get together, David.
Yeah.
Let's have a meeting.
Let's have a meeting.
All right.
Better than the meeting we had last week. But the last meeting we had was pretty good. It was a good start.
Right. Give me a call off air. We'll do some chatting.
I think the strategy of having the demonstrations after the election keeps us in unity with the No on 21 and No 22 people. And we want all those No on 21 and No on 22 people to realize that it's not only student rights, it's not only gay rights, it's also homeless people's rights. The whole human rights coalition has to come together now, and we have to stand, and we have to stand strong.
Right on. And
thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Mandy Rice Davy, you're the gals for me. Christine Keeler and Mandy Rice Davy, I'll keep you company. You can have your Marilyn, your Carolyn, your Jacqueline. Grace Kelly never meant that much to me. Just give me Christine Keeler, Mandy Rice Davy. You're the gals for me, I'll give you secrets, and you're the gals for me. Oh, you get good defense from Robert McNamara, defends us all day long. But when Lord Procimo takes off his mascara, you know he can't go wrong. Douglas Fairbanks Jr. and Lord and Lady Astor, everybody's gonna lose their minds because of Christine Keeler, Mandy Rice Davies. Will you be mine, all mine? I'll take your picture. Will you be mine, all mine?
And in case any of you are wondering who Phil Oakes is singing about, it's about a spy scandal in the early 60s in England. So, hey, can you get more arcane than that? We'll try. Here's an article I'm going to begin reading. Towards a sensible homeless policy, New York Times. New York City and advocates for the homeless have been battling for 20 years over policies that govern the housing of the city's most vulnerable men, women, and children. The advocates captured the legal high ground in the case of Callahan versus Carey in 1981, in which the city signed a consent decree conceding that single homeless men had a right to public shelter. This protection was extended to homeless families with children in 1986. I'm going to continue reading this caller. Hello there?
Hello, Robert.
Hang with us for a minute while we finish this story.
Okay.
Over the last 5 years, Mayor Rudolph Giuliani has tried to shift the debate from what the city owes the homeless to what the homeless should be required to do in return for shelter. At issue is a proposed rule that would evict homeless people from shelters for failing to meet workfare requirements. Few disagree with the general notion that able-bodied people ought to work, but few would deny shelter to women with children who are clearly incapable of caring for themselves. The latest warnings were issued this week by Supreme Court Justice Stanley L. Sklar in New York City, who barred the city from evicting single adults from shelters, arguing that such a policy would violate the 1981 Callahan decree. The mayor maintains that the decree was rendered moot by new state laws that define shelter as a welfare benefit that could be withdrawn when recipients refuse to work. But Justice Sklar has a powerful point when he notes that the city's tendency to make mistakes, the simple bureaucratic error which might send an individual out into the street because he or she was unable to understand or to cooperate with these requirements, might be the error which results in that individual's death by exposure, death by violence, or death by sheer neglect. The mayor has a right to appeal, but a policy would boot New York's most vulnerable citizens into the street is both inhumane and politically insupportable. What Justice Sklar and others are saying is that the city needs to design a program based less on threats of renewed homelessness and more on methods that have already helped the homeless get back on their feet. Any sensible policy would include not only sanctions, but a network of social service supports that teach homeless people the skills they need to live independently, and of course, a little housing and some decent jobs would be good too. And Santa Cruz does New York City one better by not only throwing people out on the streets with evictions, as Mary Cotry is going to find on 601 Thursday morning, but also making it illegal for them to sleep at night, even if they huddle under a bush. That's the sleeping ban. But on the line with us, we have that sometime homeless refugee, now apparently in questionable housing, Scott Graham. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm good. So what do you make of all this you've been hearing? You've got some pungent points to make, perhaps?
Well, on the one point that was being made about the Dolphin Lee, and when you were talking to Jane Bearer about the requirements of citizenship in order to live at the place, or, you know, being legally in the country, I mean... I think one of the points that was missed there is that this court case that Mercy is currently going through to try to ignore those laws, at the moment, they have to obey that law. They can't ignore that law. Once the suit is settled, if the judge decides in Mercy's favor, then... of course, they'll be able to ignore that. But at the moment, all low-income housing developments that have federal money, it doesn't have to be just HUD money. It has to, any form of federal money. There is a requirement that the people be in the country legally. They don't have to be U.S. citizens, but they have to be here legally. They have to have paperwork.
You know what I need to do is I need to see documentation, because I'm hearing with these assertions from you and Phil, and then I'm hearing on the other side Elizabeth Vogel stating that CDBG and home funding are exempt from the immigrant requirement, and secondly that...
Well, that's what their court case is about right now, Robert.
About CDBG and home funding?
About federal funding in general.
They say, as I understand it, their court case is about state funding the state housing, you know, fund. And I mean, again, I don't know. I mean, I am really in the dark, and I'm getting different claims. So
I don't know, you know, the exact facts of their case. All I know is that until that case gets settled, they have to obey the current law, which is the one they're fighting.
Of course, that's the second assertion that she made, if I'm not misquoting her, was that they are not obeying the current law. They claim they refuse to obey the current law, and they won't obey the current law, and that,
Well, maybe, you know, that there's a possibility that what they're currently doing at other places like Neary's Lagoon and Sycamore, maybe they can get away with still not obeying the law because that's what they're going to court over. But anything that they do subsequent to that, they would lose all their funding on a federal level, which they're not going to jeopardize. Because if they do that here in Santa Cruz, they're going to jeopardize all their federal funding on the entire West Coast, and they're not going to do that.
Well, I think these are important... important considerations, and again, I hope that if I talk to her again, I can see what new story she has or what new response she has to this, and try to actually, what we need, of course, are the underlying documents, and I guess it's la library time. Any other considerations come up for you as you listen to the show this morning?
Well, the other consideration is I'm wondering why you continually try to sound like Tim Fitzmaurice when you describe the conditions of the Dolphin and the Lee. I can't understand why you're also someone who maybe you're trying to make up for what Mayor Sugar said to you a few weeks about by shilling for the landlords down there or something, but I think you've sounded enough like Tim
recently. I was deeply upset
on this thing.
By the mayor's criticism, and I'm trying to get back into his good graces somehow. You know, I've got to... Actually, the reason that I've gotten a little touchy about conditions, and not so much the Lee, I haven't seen the Lee, the Dolphin, is I was in a couple of those apartments.
Right, but listen, Robert, the thing
I didn't
is,
like what I saw.
Right, but the thing is, that's you. You're coming from an upper-middle-class background.
That's also the tenant. The tenant was complaining big time.
Okay, well,
she didn't like it either, Robert.
The thing I want to say is, those are people's homes at this moment. And it doesn't matter whether even if they're complaining about it. They're the only ones that have the right to do that. Nobody else should be able to go in there and say, I see this, and therefore it stinks. And the latest definition of what home means nowadays is home is the place where they have to let you in.
Wait a minute. I can support the right of a tenant to say of a landlord, that guy's fucking me over and he's running a slum. Now, I don't know if I'd necessarily use that kind of language to apply to Dolphin and Lee, but I certainly can support the rights of tenants to demand better conditions without, you know, either being a tenant myself. You know, I can talk about shitty conditions in apartments, and that doesn't mean I have to support the Dolphin Lee raising.
Right, but I think there's enough people out there already, Robert, that are spreading enough misinformation about the conditions there that I don't know if any of the tenants down there gave you permission to speak for them on this issue, but I would much rather hear it from them than from you.
Well, it upsets me
when I hear it from Tim.
I understand.
And to hear the exact same words Tim uses coming out of your mouth.
Well, I like to think I have my own words.
And you're supposedly on the other side of the fence on this issue.
Right.
I don't see that there's much difference.
Well,
you've
seen the document that has 12 tenants' claims, a specific problems with the Dolphin.
They're all minor problems, though, Robert. There's no major problem. There's holes in the roof. I can look up and see the stars. My windows.
They obviously think that they're major enough to bring them to the attention of the landlord and to risk some kind of retaliation.
The whole thing is that recently the city inspected every unit on both of those properties.
I know.
And so far...
I agree with you. However, that does not mean that the conditions are something that I wouldn't support tenant complaints about, and that's what I'm talking about. You know,
you talking about tenants' complaints is one thing. You putting out an opinion, your own opinion, that these are substandard somehow or not very good conditions, I think is you're working against what your supposed objective is when you put stuff out like that.
I know. I have a problem that I'm a bit divided.
So I think you should keep your opinion on that particular issue to yourself and let the tenants speak for themselves.
Well, the tenants don't have a radio show. And frankly, I tried to get them on the radio show, but I haven't yet been able to do that. You know, I mean, and they also all speak Spanish. We need a translator, and I'm hoping to get one in the days ahead. But, you know, I have to be honest about what I see. And, indeed, there is a middle-class reality there. You know, I am a middle-class person. I mean, not that my conditions are that good either, the ones I live under. But, you know, when I come into a situation when I see 2 inches of water in a shower and the tenant tells me this has happened repeatedly and she hasn't gotten any repairs from the landlord, and, you know, and when she takes me over to something else and complains about the stove, and this is actually in front of the landlord. This is when... Maria Gutierrez was there. I mean, it's not that I regard this as definitive. The next tenant was quite different. She was more. She was quite happy with
right,
the situation.
Yeah,
I know.
You've gone over this whole thing before.
So the reason
I'm saying, Robert, is that
I have my doubts.
You got to stop sounding like Tim when you describe the conditions there. That's my only criticism.
You really know how to hurt a guy, don't you?
Either that or I don't know.
Well, I was hoping that Tim and I could, you know, get in some kind of bonding situation, but since he doesn't call me anymore, I don't know. I understand what you're saying. It takes away from the force of the argument to admit that one has concerns about the conditions that the people are living under, and I think, you know, that's true. Intellectual honesty requires that I say that. And plus, I think there is an issue regarding... certainly, these facts can be manipulated by city authorities that want to kick people out. you know, or proceed with their little affordable housing project, regardless of who gets back into it. But it's also true that, you know, there may be a landlord-tenant situation as well. So, I mean, I'm...
Well, yeah, but that's a different issue. You know, to me, that's an entirely separate issue from
It is a separate issue, but it's not one that I think respect it. I can't really persuasively remain silent on that issue when it's brought up by the other side, without acknowledging either. Yes, it's true, but it's not entirely. It's not relevant to this affordable housing.
Well, concerns to me, have. The thing that's relevant about the existing buildings is that right now there's a group of people that live there that call that home. Even if they were to build affordable housing somewhere else and successfully move 100% of those people into the new affordable housing, then rehab the Dolphin Lee, there's people that live in under bushes, under bridges, out in the woods, that would probably just as soon call that home also.
That's true.
And with a little bit of rehab, get all the showers working, functioning good, you know, maybe redo the wiring, put in new flooring, whatever it needs. But to eliminate that housing and then actually build fewer units...
It's ridiculous.
...is ridiculous.
Quite right.
That housing should be preserved
and
rehabbed.
No issue with that. I mean, we agree on that. Although there is also the concern that the kind of housing that it's being used for, the many families that have to crowd into those rooms, it would be better if there were obviously bigger rooms, and that's one of the arguments in favor of a new housing project. But I suppose...
the new housing project doesn't have to be on that site.
No, of course not. Of course not.
People would continue to call that home if those housing units were still there.
No, we're not.
Rehab,
we're not.
People would still continue to call it home.
We don't disagree.
The definition of home is the place where they have to let you in.
When you get
to your home, you feel everyone once they finally get home every day or every night or whenever, they feel good. You know, they can just finally kick back, and it's like to not have that can be a very nerve-wracking experience.
It can drive you to drugs, even.
To anything.
And drink.
Suicide. All sorts of things.
Homicide.
Yeah.
Or even counsel-icide. Yeah. Let me ask you, while I've got you on the line, if you know what's coming up on the council agenda for Tuesday.
Well, it's a special meeting. It's just an afternoon meeting on the water supply.
So it's not, shall we say, terribly exciting to folks involved in poverty issues?
Well, one of the things that I've been advocating at other meetings where they've had on the water supply is that they, you know, because they keep on talking about the demand on the water system by the time the whole city is built out, and Live Oak, because our water system services Live Oak, too. And I keep on telling the city that, well, you should save a certain allocation of water for low-income housing. You know, because at some point you're going to have to tell people, unless you get new water sources, you're going to have to tell people no more new hookups. And when you get to that point, if you haven't built all your affordable housing, people are going to raise holy hell if you say, well, we're going to allow a new hookup for this affordable housing. But if you already say, well, we're going to allocate this amount of water, future water use, to affordable housing, nobody's going to be able to say anything in the future if you have a moratorium and you say, well, we still have this allotment for affordable housing.
Now, is that issue going to be actually on the agenda tomorrow? On Tuesday?
Making an allotment for affordable housing?
Yeah.
No.
But you will mention it, no doubt?
I'm going to try to, yeah.
And this will be at the 3 o'clock council session?
Right. And so what they're going to be discussing is two water issues. One is finding a new source, and the other is this plan that some consultant came up with on how to encourage lower water use by all the water customers.
Well, so then I would encourage people to kind of mark on their calendars 4 o'clock, show up at the city manager's office if you're concerned about an open police review, city council examination of the Citizens Police Review Board law, so that it actually gives up some teeth. Although that's still debatable that could ever happen, but still it should be an open process. And apparently right now they're trying to close that down. 4 o'clock, city manager's office tomorrow. 5:30, homeless issues task force. I believe it's across the street, but David Silva suggested it might be at Loudon Nelson. The number to call to find out is the city clerk, 420-503. 1-800-530, or you can always call the Huff line, and we'll try to give you some info. Then tomorrow, then I guess also tomorrow, is it tomorrow or is it Tuesday? Do you remember, Scott, the Ed Fry trial on the Mercy housing?
I believe it's Monday, tomorrow.
So it is tomorrow at 11 o'clock in the morning in Department 2, even before all these shenanigans trying to get them to open their meeting of the CPRB and the homeless issues, is the trial of tenants being evicted by Mercy Housing from trailers and being denied reentry. The very, really kind of analogous situation to what seems to be the fate or the proposed fate for the Dolphin and Lee tenants. Did you have any comments on that one, Scott?
This is very pertinent because they're talking about doing the exact same thing here, where they're going to have a pre-screening process where they're going to screen people, and before they move them out, and they're going to say, oh yes, you qualify, you'll be able to get this new housing. And then they're going to have another screening process that happens just before they move back in. And it may very well turn out that a number of people between the two times, well, somehow they'll come up with some reason that the person is not eligible. And I think that's kind of a scary thing. I mean, if you're guaranteed something at one moment, and then at some number of months down the line, that guarantee no longer exists. And one of the other things, I mean, even taking aside these two screening processes, one of their things is that if you have committed a crime, I'm not sure exactly the extent of the crime, but if you've committed crimes within the last 3 to 5 years...
Crimes of violence involving drugs, yeah.
Crimes of violence or involving drugs. Well, what happens if you commit a crime, and then you go to court, and then you go to jail? Supposedly, you settled your debt with society once that's all over with.
But not your debt with Mercy Housing, apparently.
Right. I mean, where does someone's criminal activity stop following them around? I mean, once they've served their time in jail, it's all over. That should not be a mark against them for getting housing. And
those housing agencies that insist on it be a mark should not be chosen by the city as sole service providers.
Right.
I think that's the bottom line. Also, I guess on Wednesday, I guess on Tuesday, there'll be the beginning of David Silva's and the fast for many people that will suddenly be, they were taking only 2 meals in January, 1 meal in February, and now they're going to take no meals. It's going to be liquid fast for at least 8 people fighting the sleeping ban. And for those interested in that, again, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, and we will sort of refer you to David and other sources. Anything you want to announce coming up in the next week, Scott, that folks should know about?
Nothing offhand. I wish I had some idea of something that the people should get involved in, but, you know, there's always something going on. And, you know, one of the things that is happening now is this Broadway Bromer bike path thing is still trying to work its way through. And basically, this is a complete farce. It's a complete waste of taxpayers' money. It's a total aberration of what people thought they were purchasing the green belt for. And
it's a 12-foot wide path through the
Arana Gulch green belt.
And you pointed out in the past it simply serves as an opportunity for police to move in and start harassing and investigating and running
right
around with their vehicles.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons behind them saying that it needs to be big enough for emergency vehicles and the bridges have to be built strong enough for emergency vehicles is because once they put the path in there, more people will be going in there. And so then they're going to have to patrol it. I mean, it's just these leaps that they're making are just insane. You know, it's like, well, why do it if it's going to make a situation where you're going to have emergency vehicles there? But basically, you know, there are small encampments of homeless people in Arana Gulch right now in various locations. And this so-called bike path, which is really a secretive patrol path for the police and the Parks and Rec rangers, is just going to give them better access to go harass those people and harass anyone else in the Arana Gulch Greenbelt. You know, it's like if you stray off this path, they're going to harass you.
How can people register their dissent? You want to give a phone number they can call or anything of that sort?
Well, they can actually call Public Works. I'm not sure what the number is, but Public Works, Ted Lopez at Public Works is the person in charge of this project right now. And let me see if I can find Public Works real quick here.
Also, folks should be aware, let's see. Something I was going to announce.
Okay, the Public Works number is 520-5160.
520-5160.
Right.
To oppose Brommer,
Brommer Broadway patrol path.
Right, the patrol path. I think we've had enough boondoggles by the police, and this again is why I think we should have some real police oversight. And I promised myself and my audience I wouldn't be spending a lot of time on the Citizens Police Review Board, and I'm not. I'm trying to avoid it, although I'm about to play a speech about sort of issues involving the police and the board, which I think, at least insofar as we're talking about the police, it's important. But again, I invite people to come on down tomorrow around 3:45, the city manager's office. That's right next to the mayor's office in the complex of office buildings near the city council chambers. And just, you know, make your opinion known that these meetings have got to be open. We're also going to hopefully be beginning protests on March 8th around the sleeping ban downtown, assuming we get enough folks signed up, and invite people to come to that. And I believe every Wednesday at noon, David Silva will be having a kind of a meeting at City Hall to gather signatures and to, you know, let people know the situation for the current fast. And, of course, on Thursday at 6 in the morning is when Mary Kutry at 321A Cedar Street gets evicted, and hopefully I'll be down there with an umbrella and a sign, and that's not much to offer her, but that's what I'm going to be offering at the moment.
Well, that's one of the things I can't understand. We've got these so-called relocation experts up from L.A. here in town. We've got council member Tim Fitzmaurice, who says that his real main objective to low-income housing is helping the elderly have affordable housing. And here we have an elderly woman who needs help getting a low-income place to live, and everyone's sitting on their hands.
Well, I know she's called Sugar, and Sugar hasn't responded. I'm going to suggest she contact Fitzmaurice as well, although...
Well, he's the one that's, you know, saying he's doing it. His main objective, not only is this Dolphin Lee thing one of his objectives, but his real main objective is affordable housing for the elderly.
Come in.
And I think Mary is custom made for Tim. Tim should offer to help. I don't know why he hasn't, and I don't know what the problem is here. Why the city's not doing a thing for this woman? Supposedly redevelopment has money to help people that are don't have first, last, and deposit, and they also have like money to put people up in a hotel for a month or something while they're trying to find a place and all this kind of stuff. And the planning department, their housing division, supposedly has people that will help you find a house. And nobody has come forward yet. I don't know if Mary has actually gone to the city for help.
She has. She went to Sugar, and Sugar gave her some numbers to call. She called those numbers. The result has been a five-day notice pounded on her door on Friday, and now she faces the 6:01 a.m. Thursday deadline to get out in the morning. I got to run on you now, Scott.
Okay.
I appreciate
your
calling.
Good talking to you, Robert.
Hey, good to hear you.
And stop running down the conditions at the Dolphin Lee. Let other people do that. I think they're doing a good enough job. They don't need your help.
I'm feeling more and more run down myself.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we're almost at the end of the show. I'm going to play a little bit from previous meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board, but not before we get this last phone call in. Hi there, you're on free radio.
Hi, Uncle Robert. David Silva again.
Go ahead, David.
I do have the agenda for the Homeless Issues Task Force. It is Loud Nelson Center, 5:30 Monday.
Okay.
I agree with most everything, you know, Scott Graham has said in terms of the principles of relocation. You know, 100% guarantee. You know, I've always stood by that. But, you know, as you know, me and 19 other AIDS households were facing homelessness all this past year, and I got really moving on it and trying to find myself housing, and went down to the Housing Authority and pounded on the table down there, and they gave us the MOD rehab list, which is five houses, five places in the entire county. We had to move from a two-bedroom down to a one-bedroom in order to even get a list. They wouldn't give us a list for a two-bedroom. Dolphin Lee was one of those places, and I must say, you know, I come from a migrant farm worker background. I grew up living, you know, with dirt floors and tin roofs, you know, and outhouses. So I know what substandard living is, and I'll tell you the truth, Robert, I thought that was pretty substandard there. I have to agree with you there.
How many apartments did you see, Dave?
The one that was Mod Rehab, the one that the county approves.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a nightmare that I was willing to, in order to stay in Santa Cruz, I was willing to accept that nightmare, but I pushed real hard to get into Hidden Creeks, and I'm really glad I got into Hidden Creek, you know, 200 Button Street.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's much, 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 much nicer. It would be nice if Dolphin Lee...
you, me, and Tim Fitzmaurice, I guess.
I guess. But I agree with everything that Scott's saying on principle.
Me too. He's right.
There does need to be something done there. It's a good place to go to commit suicide.
Right. Well, you don't even need to do that. You can just step outside, and then Sergeant Baker will call it an autoerotic death, or was it Sergeant Clark?
Of course.
Yeah.
And as far as the bicycle path, the Brommer bike path, I remember when Celia Scott was running for city council, and I remember when Catherine Byers was running for city council. Incursion into the Arana Gulf itself. It was going to go from the Bible Church to Brommer, and it was a skyway, and it was for bicyclists and pedestrians, and it was to save bicyclists from the dangerous Capitola-Soquel, you know, merge, Capitola Road, Soquel merge, and to save bicyclists that are commuters from, you know, the east side of Live Oak and so forth through the city. And how it, when it got down onto the ground and into Arana Gulch, I don't know. But it wasn't supposed to be that way. I know there was a period it got down to the ground, and Michael Hernandez and everybody was adding soccer fields and adding all kinds of stuff, and we fought that back. But they still haven't got it back up to the skyway that it was supposed to be originally.
You know, I just wanted to, while I have you on the line, David, let you know that what I heard from Linda LeMaster, who met with Keith Sugar and Chief Belcher about a week ago, trying to get from them, answers to 8 questions. She tried to get an answer to the question about...
I know Steve Belcher's answers. No.
Well, you're way ahead of me, David. The question she had for him was, we've already learned in this very important report that Belcher released, which showed that homeless people are 40 to 100 times more likely to be beaten than those with homes, and that's only with reported police assaults.
Yeah.
But what was missing from those stats was any indication of whether there had been any arrests or convictions of any of the alleged assailants. And also, we only got these records for 1 year, 1999. We wanted them for 96 through 98 to get some indication of whether there's been an increase or a decrease. Belcher has kind of refused to do
Butchie
it.
Butchie Baker said that would be very, very difficult to do, right?
Well, Butchie Baker wasn't at this meeting, but he did say that before, according to a secondhand report.
Yeah.
And it was Belcher, though, who, with Keith Sugar in the room, the man who apparently got Belcher to act on the report to get the 99 stats out before, said no, he wouldn't do it. And Sugar, when asked to do it, said something to the effect of, this is a secondhand report, not until and unless, I get more substantiation of the need for it. Again, giving more work to people to try to provide justification for what seems to me pretty obvious background information we need. And you know, this is the information that prompted Michael Schmidt to start circulating, you know, his own concerns about safe sleeping places.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, right now is kind of, it's slated for its second session in March of City Council, but it's really kind of an empty proposal at the moment in my mind, because it involves just the armory, which needs state assistance, and also the county building, which needs county approval. So.
It's no gain. It's no gain. And what he started with originally was, basically going back to where we all were about 3 years ago before we decided to start compromising on safe sleeping zones and realized that with this new initiative that we had to give up on even trying anything in the downtown area, we realized that the powers that be, and I do mean the powers that be, would not have it. And so for Michael Schmidt and the Chamber of Commerce to wave this carrot before us, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's the same thing the Homeless Issues Task Force did in the fall when they called for a moratorium on the entire camping ordinance. It's just waving the carrot before us. I think we ought to be realistic of what we can get, and we ought to go real strong and hard for the safe sleeping zones and decriminalization of sleep. Once we begin that process, then that area is staked out. Then we could find out where the camping grounds can be, where the different kinds of shelters can be. But we need to stake out some turf, and that's what the Safe Sleeping Zones Initiative does. So we need people to carry that petition. By the way, the new rules are you don't have to live in the city to carry that petition. You don't have to be a registered voter. You don't have to be a citizen to carry that petition. So you can carry that petition just as long as it's citizens of the city of Santa Cruz that sign it. So we need a lot of volunteers, lots and lots of volunteers, because we put an artificial deadline, regardless of what the Sentinel said. The artificial deadline for us is May 15th, because we want to get that in there filed by May 27th with all our own verification in order to get it on the November ballot. It's sort of like a life insurance policy for those of us that are going on the fast. It'll be too late for some of us, but at least we'll be done. Thank you, Robert. Hello? Are we on the air?
Actually, I think David was on the air, but for some reason my end of the receiver wasn't working. That was David Silva, and if you want more information about this stuff, give a call to 423-HUFF, and we'll kind of put you through. If you want to find information out directly about the fast, volunteer to join the rolling fast with 8 other people who will be taking nothing but liquids, as I understand it, starting day after tomorrow. Give a call to 429-5284.
Yes.
This is a simple little correction, Robert.
Oh, thank you. This is Linda of the Homeless Issues Task Force.
Yes, and that's what it's about. The Homeless Issues Task Force tomorrow, Monday, meets at 5:30 at Loudoun Nelson Community Center.
All right. David actually just said that, and I apologize for giving misinformation on that. Yeah,
that's
fine. Normally it's at the Municipal Auditorium, but I guess tomorrow at 5:30 it's at the... Anything on the agenda we should know about?
Well, just that for people that can't usually get there right at 5:30, oral communications will be later, so don't let your...
What time later?
Well, I don't know. It's a little more than halfway through the agenda.
Oh, boy. So you mean like 6:30 or 7? Or?
Yeah, it should be after 6:30.
Will you be flexible and allow people who come in to be able to speak if they can't stay?
Yes. I think we have to do that.
That's great.
We have an accountability to the public. It could be rearranged, but it's posted so that people that aren't always at the beginning of the meetings who might be interested will have a chance to...
I've just kind of given, as you heard, a kind of a brief discussion of some of the things that came out of your meeting with Chief Belcher, or didn't come out of your meeting with Chief Belcher.
I missed that part.
Mayor Sugar, is there something, I mean, maybe you can summarize what you feel can be said about that meeting, if anything?
I don't think there's anything worthy of note, but I hope interested people come to this meeting so that when we go back to this pair, maybe there'll be even a more succinct message on our side.
You know about the closed meeting tomorrow, the Citizens Police Review Board and the City Council. They're meeting tomorrow at 4:00 to...
this is their review thing?
Their subcommittee that is supposed to be working for the next 6 months to make life better, for and stronger and yummier for those who want to have real police review.
Mm-hmm.
And as some of us who feel this has to be an open process, can't be done behind closed doors, and we're going to be there at 3:45. I want to invite you and others to come on down.
Thank you.
And also to ask you, what were the questions you asked of Chief Belcher and Heath Sugar that were important on homeless issues?
Well, I'm not going to go over that right now, but I started the conversation asking about the police doing a better outreach so people feel safe reporting victims or crimes they see without feeling like they're going to be put through the warrant ringer. And I closed with looking for the police department's position on the Mike Schmitz Chamber of Commerce safe zone plan, meaning overnight vehicle parking plan. And overall, I got a resistant impression. I didn't feel like in substantive matters the police chief is concerned about letting anything change that might save the lives, of homeless people.
Yes, I'm here. Go ahead.
So that's kind of a big recap, and I'll have to go through all the issues, even where there weren't real answers at the meeting. So that'll be halfway through the meeting at the Homeless Issues Task Force tomorrow, just before the posted oral communication time.
Mm-hmm. How goes your own search for affordable housing?
It sucks. You know those things Scott Graham was saying about things the city claims to provide? Well, they're not there. They're not there. Even getting in touch with Sam Farr while he's being elected doesn't help. I've tried everything I could think of.
I hear the patter of little feet on the stairs. I've got to go.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Linda.
Mm-hmm.
On the dot at 1:30, it's the talk show host. Certainly not. that you love to have. I would not be off it. We don't want any blank airtime.
Thank you for being with us for this recorded March 5th show. We'll be returning on Thursday, March 9th, for a special interview with the daughter of the owner of the Dolphin Lee, actually the Lee Complex, Julie Lee. She'll be in the studio to answer questions, and we'll hopefully have some answers from the city bureaucracy. Linda Garner and I are going to roll over the files and look at complaints against the Lee and Dolphin complexes and see what's there, how substandard is the building. Are there really going to be 200 to 300 people evicted in the name of affordable housing without the substance? Let's look into that issue next week. And thanks for being with us. Sorry this was a recorded show and had to be a repeat show, but I am over in San Jose, hopefully not getting arrested, but possibly getting arrested unless the city responds with some kind of meaningful affordable housing and decriminalization of sleep for homeless people. Thanks again. Tune in 6 to 8, Free Radio Santa Cruz, next Thursday. And as a little filler, in case the next talk show hasn't come in, and I'm sure that hasn't happened, but if it hasn't, we have Morgan Firestar, a woman who ended her life in the mid-90s. She was a fighter against psychiatric oppression and a survivor of the psychiatric system. Here are some of the songs she wrote and sang.
The government wants to give us money, and we don't have to pay it back. The government wants to have our movement, and there are no strings attached. Only a form to be filled out each day. Only a grant to be approved. Think of the money that's coming our way. Don't be a political prude. People from all 50 states, let's let the government pay those long distance telephone rates. Only a form to be filled out each day, only a grant to be approved. Think of the money that's coming our way. Don't be a political prude. We need a board of directors to qualify for this year. And we should buy a computer of the money that's coming our way. Don't be a political prude. We're very proud of our budget. Look at how quickly it's grown. We've come a long, long way, baby. Good at the game, and to keep more money coming our way, we will do more of the same. The government wants to give us money, and we don't have to pay it back. The government government wants to help our movement, and there are no strings attached. And they say there are no strings attached.
Thank you.
anyhow. You chose to be a doctor of the mind. You learned to worship the dollar sign. Every victim means money to spend. No one expects mental illness to end. Mr. Psychiatrist, I want to tell you this. Crimes which the laws allow, crimes you're committing now, are still crimes anyhow. You long for power, your goal is control over the helpless, the drugged, and the old. You encourage parents to lock their kids away. You cause despair and suicide every day. Mr. Psychiatrist, I want to tell you this. Crimes which the laws allow, crimes you're committing now, are still crimes anyhow. I don't believe in your weird theories, and I won't label my feelings as disease. So put your DSM-3 back on the shelf, because I'd rather believe in myself. Mr. Psychiatrist, I want to tell you this. Crimes which the laws allow, crimes you're committing now, are still crimes anyhow. Mr. Psychiatrist, I want to tell you this. Crimes which the laws allow, crimes you're committing now, are still crimes anyhow. Took the blame and wore the badge depression for all the world to see. They insisted she was ill and forced her to take every pill until she choked on their hypocrisy. She believed the lies they told her, and she saw we the pain you had. Maybe you deserved it, and besides, it's over now. We had to take you to the shrink who didn't want to stop and think, and we're glad that you survived somehow. Yes, I survived, but I remember, and my outrage has not died.
Offering therapy.
like every mental patient does. Oh, my darling, it's the end of the line. I tried to help you, but I from feeling the truth, shelter from being abused. Yes, I lost you when you took their part, swallowed your pills, hardened your heart, trading dreams for drugs, like every mental patient does. From feeling the truth, shelter from being abused. Yes, I lost you when you took their part, swallowed your pills, hardened your heart, trading dreams for drugs, like every mental patient does. You don't know what happened to last night. strange has happened to your sight. Psychiatric drugs, you're walking down the street. Haven't you forgotten the events of the week? Psychiatric drugs, your head begins to spin. You close your eyes and lose the day you're in. You wake up again, it's 3 a.m. and you're trying to shake yourself awake, but there's no way. And shining. You think you're finally awake, but it's a fake. Psychiatric drugs, take them like a loser does, with the risk of living in a world of fuzz. Psychiatric drugs give you the illusion of a change in your pain and confusion. They distract you from your heart that's breaking. By the way, they take over your life. If you have a drug that you are taking, shrink knows what you think and write. Psychiatric drugs, I'd rather live without the feeling of being turned inside out. Psychiatric drugs, they're all the same to me. I don't want to be cured.